Job chapter 3. Now, we need to remember what we're reading. So let's just think about it a second before we start chapter 3. Job was perfect and upright and one that feared God and stayed away from, ran away from, kept away from evil. That's chapter 1, verse 1. I mean, all that is said about Job right away. Later on in the chapter, God himself will say the very same thing about Job. So Job was a godly man. This was a long time ago, and there are a lot of things that Job's going to learn, because he doesn't know it yet, that are going to be reruns for you and I. In other words, Messiah had not come yet. Messiah was promised. If you read Genesis chapter 3, Messiah was promised, but it would be thousands of years from Job's time before Jesus Christ would show up on this earth, walk in human flesh, and die on the cross for the sins of the world. So you're going to see Job say some things, and you're going to say, wow, that doesn't make sense. Well, the reason it doesn't make sense is because you know something that Job didn't understand. Now, if you don't know it, if I don't know, we certainly should know it, because the Old Testament, the New Testament teaches us. We know more about life after death than Adam did, than Eve did, than Job did, than David did, than Solomon, than Isaiah, Malachi. Pick anybody back there. You know more about heaven and what's coming. You know more about how it works because God has made it more clear to you as you've studied through your New Testament. So we remember that Job was upright, was perfect, mature. All those things God said about him. And the devil didn't like Job. Although it was God who pointed Job out of the crowd. God said, have you considered my servant Job? You remember that. The devil said, yeah, I've considered him. You've put a hedge about him. Remember that? Or another way you could say that is you've hedged him in. You've surrounded him by protection. You've given him money, wealth, big family, lots of stuff, lots of land. You take that all away, and he'll curse you to your face. Remember that? And God said, you have my permission. Take it all away. And in one day, Job lost everything. Now, I've read that many Bible scholars believe that Job suffered more than any human except Jesus himself. I've read that. Now, of course, I've talked to others who are going through lawsuits right now, and they say, I'm suffering more than any human has ever suffered. You know, suffering is in the eyes of the beholder. I noticed that. Whatever you're going through is harder than whatever everybody else is going through. It always seems that way. Whatever I'm going through is much more difficult than what you're going through. That's why people divorce. That's exactly why they divorce. Because, see, if you had to live with the one they had to live with, you would do the same thing. So no matter how bad yours is, they'll tell you theirs is worse. But I don't think it really works that way. And Job did not sin when he lost his whole family except his wife and lost everything he owned, everything he was in one day. That has never happened to you. Maybe you've lost a little bit. Maybe you've lost a loved one. Maybe you've lost what you consider large amounts of money. But chances are good you didn't lose every bit of everything that you are and that you have in a single day. But Job did. And in it all, Job said, you know, I came out naked into this world. I came in the world with nothing. I am going to leave this world with nothing. And, of course, we remember that even if he hadn't lost everything, he still understood, when I leave, I'm leaving it all here. I told you about the family. the relatives of a very, very, very wealthy man. He was very sick. They were all in the living room worried, sort of, that he was going to die. The doctor came out and said, he's gone. One of the young people bravely asked, remember, how much did he leave? Because, see, the family was there just to see how much they were going to get. And the doctor said he left it all. You know, you're not going to take it with you. That's what Job said. I came in naked, I'm leaving. I came without, I'm leaving without. That's the way it's going to be. Chapter 2, you remember. Satan comes back into the presence of God. God said, have you considered Job? Satan says, yeah, yeah, I have. God said, look, he's still upright. He still worships. He still follows me. He's still obedient. He's still mine. And Satan says, yeah, you've hedged, you've surrounded him. You can't touch the guy skin for skin. You take his health away from him. Give him a little bit of physical pain and he'll curse you to your face. And what did God say? Go ahead. Do anything you want, except you cannot kill him. Now, wait a minute. Did you hear that? Let me find it for you. Verse 6 of chapter 2. Listen closely. And the Lord said unto Satan, behold, he is in thine hand, but save his life. In American, you can do anything you want. He's in your power, but you may not take his life. Okay, now, everybody, what is keeping Job alive? God. Thank you very much. See how easy this is? Easy to understand? Now, are you sure? Are you sure? Oh, wait, we're going to read chapter 3 now. Are you sure that it's because of God that Job is alive? You ought to be. I just read you the verse. The Lord said unto Satan, behold, he's in thine hand, but save his life. I will not allow you to take his life. Job is alive and doesn't die because God didn't want him to die. Okay? So with all that in mind, now we start chapter 3. And you, wait, let me back up. Remember his three friends came to sit with him? They came to really just wanted to help him however they could. But he was such a mess. He was unrecognizable. He was covered with boils. And you remember that some kind of disease struck him that they had never seen anything like it. The guy was a mess. He was in pain. And so they sat down with him. They mourned with him. But the Bible says they were silent for 7 days, 1 week. Remember, the old custom was because the person was hurting, you would allow them, if they were able to speak, you would allow them to say something first. And maybe that's what they were going by. Maybe they were just so struck by how pitiful this guy looked, they just didn't have anything to say. So for 7 whole days, you're all sitting together at the garbage dump. For 7 long days. Now, I hear people today say, man, I just can't sit for hours. I have to just get up and get moving. I just can't do it. 7 days. Job probably couldn't get up, but his friends, who felt sorry for him, sat with him for a week. Now, everybody's having a lot of time to think. I don't know what you'd be thinking. I'm not sure what I'd be thinking. We'd be thinking something different than you're thinking right now. After this, after what? After this 7-day sit of silence, Job opened his mouth and cursed his day. I used to make a joke out of it. Job cursed the day he was born. We used to say, who is the one Bible character that talked on the day he was born? It was Job. He cursed the day he was born. After this, Job opened up his mouth after 7 days of silence, and he cursed his birthday. We saw it earlier in chapter 1, remember? He cursed his day. We saw chapter 1, they got together, his sons and daughters got together, each on his own what? Day. Remember we talked about, that's his birthday. That was the day he was born. They would celebrate it. And so here Job curses his birthday, the day that he was born. And Job spoke and he said this in verse 3. Now he's had a week now to sit there and suffer and groan and think. And after 7 full days, he says, let the day perish wherein I was born. And the night in which it was said, there is a man-child conceived. Let the day be darkness, let not God regard it from above, neither let the light shine upon it. Let darkness and the shadow of death stain it, let a cloud dwell upon it, let blackness of the day terrify it. You've been waiting for somebody to say something for a whole week. You don't want to say anything stupid. You're not sure what to say to encourage this guy. You're waiting, and he starts to talk, and you think, oh good, he's going to say something. And he says, what? I wish I had never been born. That's what he just said. Cursed be the day that I was born. I'm sorry that it happened. I wish it would have never happened. I wish there was no me. How do you think Job's feeling? Down. You think? He's a little bit upset. I don't know what you expected him to say, but the truth is, after he said to his wife, you're speaking like one of the completely foolish women. Good things come from God's hand. God has obviously allowed this. We shouldn't curse God. Well, he's not cursing God. He's just cursing the day he was born. What a lousy day that was. I wish the sun never shined on it. I wish it never happened. I wish I had never been born. That's what he's saying. And then he goes on. He doesn't stop there, though. As for the night, let darkness seize upon it. Let it not be joined unto the days of the year. Let it not come into the number of the months. That's such a bad luck day that I was born, it ought to be taken off the calendar and not even counted. He was saying what some people say today about bad luck days. Some people say that Friday the 13th is just a terrible day. The number 13 is no good. So some people just are afraid to go outside on Friday the 13th. They say, don't drive your car. What Job is saying is that day was just such a bad luck day. It ought to be, people should be afraid of it. My birthday, he says, people should try to avoid that day. If he was born on the 10th, no elevator would have a floor number 10. They'd go from 9 to 11, right? That's what he's saying. Would you say the guy's in a bad mood? You say he's hurting a little bit? So far, though, he hasn't cursed God. He's real mad at the calendar. And he's hurting. And it's coming out in the fact that he's saying, I wish I had never been born. He goes on. Lo, verse 7. Let that night be solitary. Let no joyful voice come there. Don't ever celebrate on my birthday ever again. Let them curse it that curse the day who are ready to raise up their mourning. Let the stars of the twilight thereof be dark. Let it look for light but have none, neither let it see the dawning of the day. Because it shut not up the doors of my mother's womb, nor hid sorrow from mine eyes. Why died I not from the womb? Why did I not give up the ghost when I came out of the belly? Why did the knees prevent me, or why the breasts that I should suck? He says, it would have been better for the entire earth if I had never been born? Where do you think they got the story of It's a Wonderful Life? And I know that you, some of you, if you're going to be honest, you've probably felt that way, haven't you? Gone through some things and you think, man, I wish I had never been born. You ever feel that way? Many people do. They don't like to admit it, but they do. Been better off for the whole world if I had never been born. Been better off if light had never even shined on that day. The stars, the morning stars, the first one you see. Better off that it had just never happened. He says if he'd never been born, notice that, verses 6 through 12, he would have never seen trouble or suffering in this life because there would have been no life. You ever feel that way? If I'd never been born, I wouldn't have to go through this. If I'd never been born, I wouldn't have to see all this and experience it and feel all this pain and suffering, is what he's saying. I'd say that Job is not feeling well. Now, I don't think that you could come up with attention deficit on this one, like some people say, well, I would just classify him with a TMJ. And I know that's what people try to do. Right away, they look at this and say, well, let's try to psychoanalyze him. What was going on in his head? What was going on? This guy was crushed. The only thing that he had left was a little bit of life that was hanging on. That's all. Now, you've never quite been there, so you may never understand it. But the truth is, he's saying, it would sure have been better had I not even been born. Not only better for me, because I would have never experienced what I'm experiencing now. I wouldn't have lost those children. I wouldn't have lost everything. I wouldn't be in this physical condition. But it would be better for the world. The whole world would be a better place if I wasn't around. Why wasn't I born dead, he says, or stillborn? That's what he's talking about. But he doesn't stop. Verse 13 says, for now should I have lain still and been quiet. I should have slept, then had I been at rest. With kings and counselors of the earth, which built desolate places for themselves, or with princes that had gold who filled their houses with silver. He says, if I had died at birth, then I'd be at peace right now, is what he says. I'd be at rest right now. I wouldn't be feeling what I'm feeling. I wouldn't be having to deal with what I am having to deal with. Everything would be just great. I've heard people say, man, I can't wait to die. Because, see, there's no more paying taxes. There's no more pain. There's no more suffering. There's no more fighting. Nobody loves me down here. When I die, that's all going to be better. Job said, if I had never lived, I'd be at peace right now. Wouldn't have to be going through all this hassle. If he were dead at his birth, he says, my soul wouldn't be in turmoil. He would have been with those that had gone on before. In other words, those that have died. Kings. And those kings who built those mighty monuments to themselves. He said they build things out there in the middle of nowhere. I could be with those guys, with counselors, with princes, rich rulers who no longer have to struggle in this life. Interesting thinking that Job has. But do you notice he doesn't quite know what's over there, does he? Notice that? He does not know what's over there. Later on, in the presence of the Lord, the psalmist is going to say, in your presence is fullness of joy. At your right hand are pleasures forevermore. See, what Job sees is if you're dead, you're laying there and nothing's going on. and you don't have to think, and you don't have to suffer, and you don't have to hassle, and boy, that would certainly be better than what I'm going through now. That's what Job says. If he were dead at birth, he'd be hanging out with kings, or sleeping right next to him, is what he says. But he goes on, he's still not finished. Or, as a hidden, untimely birth, I had not been, as infants which never saw light. There, the wicked cease from troubling, and there, the weary are at rest. There, the prisoners rest together. They hear not the voice of the oppressor. The small and great are there, and the servant is free from his master. Job says, you know, when you're out of this life, away from all this pain, away from this suffering, away from the hassles, the turmoil, the stress, he says, the small and the great are together. In other words, there's no distinction anymore. The slaves are finally free. No matter how ugly it was for them in this life, they're finally free, he says. And he's saying, you're no longer a captive. Let's just say that in our language. As you look at the language and you turn it into American, he's saying this. I will no longer be captive to this disease. This disease has me, and I'm in such pain, but I can't seem to die. And if I were dead, no disease would have me. I'd be free. Diseases couldn't hold on. No longer have to suffer. No longer have to deal with this difficult life and all the pain. You hear people think that way all the time. You hear about suicides. They are very common, and they have become commonplace. And they seem to be happening with more regularity. Of course, people are lying to them. You know, people talk about suicide and how much better it's going to be over there. Well, the truth is, it won't be better unless you know Jesus. Messiah, the King of Kings, Lord of Lords. And so a lot of people are buying into a lie that you kill yourself and everything is okay. Doesn't work that way. Doesn't work that way at all. And God will talk to him about that a little later. We won't get that tonight. Tonight we're just going to get through what Job had to say. Well, let's see, verse 20. Almost done. Pretty good, huh? Wherefore? Or, here's a question. Now I know that you as Christians, I as a Christian, we as Christians, we ask questions sometimes that can't be answered. I mean, true? We just say, why? And sometimes the answers just don't seem to come to us. Why? People will ask you, why is this going on? Why this? Why now? And you'll go, I don't know. And Job says, why, in verse 20, is light given to him that is in misery? Why? And life unto the bitter in soul, which long for death, but it cometh not, and dig for it more than for hid treasures, which rejoice exceedingly and are glad when they can find the grave. Now see, that's a good question. Job is suffering. He has never experienced anything like this in his earthly existence. He says, my goodness, I am miserable. It would have been better if I had never been born. It would have been better for the whole world. I mean, this is a waste of a life. I don't want this. I wish I were never even here. And then he says, why is it people like himself who are hurting and who are suffering, who are miserable, who are sick and who are in unbearable pain, why is it that they continue to live when they really don't want to live any longer. They just want to be free from this pain. Why is it? Maybe you've asked that question. You've had loved ones, or you've seen others who are in pain and they're suffering, but they just don't seem to die. They would love to. Job says, I would love to be dead. Why is it that I can't even die? All of us read chapter 2. And what did God say? He's in your hands. You can do anything you want to him, but you may not take his life. So whose fault is it that Job can't die? It's God's fault, isn't it? Oh man. Can you imagine? God is not letting him die. But he is in such pain that all he wants to do is die. Talk to a friend who went through a bout with cancer, and it's not in remission, he's doing great, but he said, man, there was a time when I was on that bed and they thought I would die any time, and I was in pain and I wanted to die. I just wanted to die just to get it over with. But he said, I didn't, and I never could understand why. I was praying, God, let me die, and he didn't. Now he's doing fine and life's just a slice of heaven. Job says, why is it when people like me are suffering and they just can't take anymore and they don't want to live, why can't they die? I know the answer to that, because God is not finished yet. You know the answer to that. Job does not know the answer to that yet. Job will learn the answer quite a few chapters from now. You already know. You read chapters 1 and 2. You already know. You've already had your questions answered for you. Now you come to the New Testament and you remember you're in Jesus Christ. We belong to him. Our lives are his. We're bought with a price. We are not our own. And he knows just what he's doing. He knows why he's doing it. But we don't know. What do? We trust and obey, don't we? What do we see here? He says, you know, people really want to die. They just want to die. To be relieved of all the hurts, all the pain that they're in. But he says they seem to linger on. They long for death, he says, but they can't get to it. Death won't come. He says they actually rejoice when they finally die, just to be freed from all the pain. Now, most have never been that low. You know that, don't you? Oh, we've had some aches and some pains and some real hurts and some real questions, but never that low. Some have. And Job is definitely pretty low right now. In verse 23, he says another question, why? Another why. Why is light given to a man whose way is hid and whom God has hedged in? For my sighing comes before I eat, and my roarings are poured out like the waters. So he asks another question, legitimate. He says, why is life given to someone who doesn't want it? I don't want this. Let me die. I don't want this anymore. And he says, why is light given to a man whose way is hid? What does he mean? And the question also carries on to the way being hidden. Why do you give light or life? Why is the way hidden? He's asking. What he means is, I don't know what's happening to me. My way is hidden. I can't see where I'm going from this. I don't understand what I'm supposed to be doing about it or how I'm supposed to be dealing with it. This is beyond me. I don't know how to travel. My way is hid. He really doesn't know where the path is leading, and he doesn't know what he's supposed to do. Not only is he hurting and emotionally broken, but he's confused. Why is my way hidden? I don't know how to act. What am I supposed to do now? You ever felt that way? The doctors talk to you and you get all by yourself and you think, well, why? What do I do? What am I supposed to do? I don't know how to go from here. My way is hid. Why is that happening? And then he says something that's really right on. He says, why is light given, verse 23, to a man whose way is hid and whom God hath hedged in? He's right. Satan said that. Satan said to God, you got this guy hedged in. You got him surrounded. Let me in there. And he'll curse you to your face. God says, get on in. But you can't kill him. What's Job saying? I can't get out. You've got me surrounded and I can't break through. What are you doing to me? Now he's starting to be a little frustrated with God, which is going to be a mistake. He says, God's hedged me in. God has surrounded him so that he sees that there is no way through this. There is no way out of this. God has surrounded me. Satan said, you're right. He has surrounded you. I couldn't get in. And now that I got in and made a mess out of it, Job said, I can't get out. What's this God doing? Satan says, God, you got him surrounded. You're a bum. Job is starting to say, hey, you got me surrounded. I don't like it. You notice if he's not careful, he's going to go the wrong way here. And it's because of the pain, because of the suffering, because he cannot see and cannot understand, can't get a grasp of what's happening to him. Now, you have been given more light than Job. And even though we don't have answers, we can go to God's Word and we can read further on. You've got the entire counsel of the Word of God. And you know that God says in Romans, all things work together for good to those who love the Lord, to those who are called according to His purpose. You know now, even though you're not sure what's happening, you know that God's right there and that this is a good thing and God will use it if I will just trust in Him. Job is so confused right now and brokenhearted. Job says he sighed instead of eating. So remember that in verses 23 and 24? He said, I sigh instead of eating. That means he's so sick that he cannot eat anything, which also includes chicken soup. He can't keep anything down. Instead, he just sighs. And he sits there, scraping the boils with the broken pieces of pottery. But it doesn't stop there. He says, my roarings. In our language, you and I would use the word groaning or moaning. I notice that as I get older, I groan a little more. I get up and go, oh man, noticed it a while ago, sitting at the desk for hours, you don't think about it, then you get up and your knees go, wow, that hurts, get off me. And you're thinking, what, come on, it's all right. And you go, ooh man, coming down those stairs, whoa, you start to groan. He says, my groanings, my moanings, the noises that he's making. So that means for the last 7 days, he hasn't eaten anything. His friends have been there with him, but he has been moaning quite a bit and groaning, which I'm sure wouldn't make me comfortable sitting with him. Would it make you comfortable? Because there's nothing you could do about it. It'd make you miserable, wouldn't it? Because you think, I don't have aspirin to give him, because there weren't a lot of those available back then. You know, not much I can do for him. You just have to sit there and listen to him moan and groan. But these moans and groans, they weren't just quiet little things that you and I do when we stand up. Notice he says his roarings, his groaning, are like the noise from a waterfall. Let me read you the verse. My sighing comes before I eat. My roarings pour out like the waters. In other words, living, moving, rushing waters, like a waterfall. You ever been around waterfalls? Do they make a little bit of noise? They do. Some of them are like thunder. Must have been pretty loud groanings to have to sit and listen to for a week. Must have been a lot of pain involved in what Job was going through. And now we Take a look at the last few verses. For the thing which I greatly feared has come upon me. And that which I was afraid of has come upon me. What an amazing statement that lets us into the life of Job. Deeper than we've gotten into in chapters 1 and 2. I was not in safety, neither had I rest, neither was I quiet, and still trouble came. Those two verses are amazing. They tell us something about him. They really kind of tell us something about ourselves. He makes a statement after all of his groaning here, after he's just pouring out his heart. And he says, the thing which I greatly feared has happened to me, has come upon me. What does that mean? Even though Job, when we read in chapters 1 and 2, even though Job was living in what, excuse me, you and I would jokingly call the lap of luxury, the richest man around. Or if you like, a term that I guess isn't used too much anymore, but used to hear people use it a lot. He was living on Easy Street. Remember that? I mean, isn't that where Job lived? You knew his address. He lived in Uz. What street? Easy Street. Just follow the yellow brick road. Take it right to Easy Street. It's where everybody wants to be. You may not admit it, but you'd like to live there too. It's nice there. No pain. Everything's great. Go back out in the yard where the money tree grows. Take all the neighborhood kids to the movie. Just pull some money off the tree and head on downtown. Easy Street. And that's where Job's headquarters were at. Lap of luxury. He had it all. He didn't need anything. Had a healthy family too. 10 kids. That's a lot of kids. Imagine buying shoes for all those and, you know, and everything. 10 kids. Big family. 10 kids that weren't children anymore. These were all full-grown adults living in their own homes. Lap of luxury. Look what Job says. During that time, when I was living over there on Easy Street, he says, there were times when I got to thinking about it and I was afraid. It crossed my mind sometimes that I could lose all this. I could lose it all. And he says, and that's the very thing that actually happened to me. The thing that I, greatly feared happened to me. There were times when I was back there on Easy Street, I'd take a look around and say, you know, man, I was born without this. You know, there could come a time when this stuff could be gone. I don't know what I'd do. Job says, I was kind of afraid of that. You know, there were times when he thought about it. What would happen if I were poor and all this was gone? I wonder what I'd do. How would I earn a living? What would happen to me if this was all taken from me? I wonder what would happen to me. Boy, I hope that never happens. Lord, don't ever let that happen to me. Or, you know, what if I were to lose my health? Everything's going along fine, and then out of nowhere, my health would be gone. What would I do? How would I function? I wonder if the kids would kind of keep everything up for me, or I don't know. I wonder what would happen. I hope that never happens to me. Job said, I was afraid of that. And the very thing I was afraid of, greatly afraid of, happened. He was afraid someday that kind of thing might happen to him. His peace, he says in these last two verses, had already been disturbed way before he lost his home and kids and his health. Let me read it to you again. The thing which I greatly feared has come upon me, and that which I was afraid of has come unto me. I was not in, listen, this is interesting. I was not in safety. Neither had I rest. Neither was I quiet. And still trouble came. He's saying, everybody, I was never quite at peace. I mean, I didn't mind being rich. I certainly didn't mind being healthy, but I was afraid. What if I lose it? You know, you talk to a lot of people that have a lot of money, and that is a little bit of a fear that they have. What if it's gone someday? All of us that don't have it, we go, not a problem, you can live. They go, I don't know how, I can't imagine. I would be afraid, I don't know how I would do it. Job just told you his heart, and he's just kind of described a lot of us out loud. He just said, yeah, I was rich, but I was never quite at peace with it. Did you read that? I was not in safety. I never really felt secure. I never really had, he says, I didn't have rest. In my heart, there was an uneasiness. I was afraid this kind of thing could happen. Job is just pouring out his soul right now, isn't he? Now, we can come into the New Testament, and what does Jesus say? You cast all your cares upon me, because I care about you. But you'll find believers. I'm going to tell you something. As a believer, as a true Christian, you live on easy street. That's where you live. You have nothing to fear. You have nothing to worry about. Neither do I. We're completely together. We got promises that we can claim. Big. These are promises. He said, I would never leave you. I would never forsake you. Seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and eating and clothing and shelter, all those things will be added unto you, because your Father knows that you need those things. So don't worry about what you're going to eat. Don't worry about what you're going to wear. Don't worry about where you're going to live or how it's going to work. Seek ye first the kingdom. Now, how many Christians are worried about what they're going to eat? Even though they're living on easy street, what do they say? How are we going to eat? What happens if Y2K happens? What will we do? There'll be no dial tone. How will we live? What's going to happen to us? You notice, Job said, even when I was on easy street in the lap of luxury, I had no rest. I had no peace. You know what's going to be cool at the end of this book? He's going to be healed. But he is going to be at peace. Because he's going to know his God much better. He's going to be closer to the Lord his God. What's the key to the rest and to the peace? He that dwelleth in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. Thou shalt keep him in perfect peace whose mind is stayed on thee. And here we see a man who has it all and who confesses in all this pain, I never was at peace. I never was at rest. I never in my heart really felt safe. That's astounding, isn't it? What did God say about him? The guy's mature. He's upright. He stays away from evil. He reverences the Lord. Didn't God say that about him? But God never mentioned to Satan, there are some things in Job's life I want to purify. I want to strengthen him even more. I want to make him more. And so I'll use you, dummy. That's what he said to Satan. So go ahead. You can have him, but you can't take his life. And then you go back to Romans. We quoted it earlier, Romans chapter 8. Read through the whole chapter. Hide behind Romans 8. There's no condemnation. And all things work together for good. This is going to be good for Job. It's going to bring God glory. It will purify Job. You turn the fire on. Job's now in the fire. And what's happening? Right away, after 7 days, what have you seen happen with the fire going? The impurities are doing what? Coming right to the surface, aren't they? And God's going to scrape those away, and he will be more pure than when he went into the fire. But I don't see anywhere here where the fire is fun. Oh, are you going to love the fire? Oh, Job, oh man. No, I don't see it. Job's in pain. All of us. And I mean, that includes every one of us. We know. And we have known it for a long time. That stuff happens. You know that, don't you? No one has to tell it to you. You just know it. We all know it. Our motto is stuff happens to everybody else. But we still know it. Stuff happens. It just surprises us when it happens to us. But we all know stuff happens. And we know that at any moment, the stock market could crash. We know that. I mean, we just plain know it, don't we? Nobody talks about it, and we all hope, and we all think, and we all plan, and we all figure, but every one of us knows that at any moment, that could be gone, couldn't it? And so if you've got something in there, you just trust in God, and if it collapses and gone, well, and is gone, there it is, it's gone. Every one of us knows that banks, God bless them, aren't going to last forever, and that they could fold, they could shut. The savings and loans have done it in the past, and you could lose your socks. We all know that. We all know that at any moment laws could change and your taxes could triple. We know that stuff happens. We just know it. We don't like to talk about it. We like to hope. We like to discuss politics. We like to run down and push up. But the truth is we know that deep inside, don't we? We also know the dreaded health question, don't we? That we don't like to think about. I read an article that said every one of us has cancer cells in our bodies. But for some reason, they don't go out of whack in everybody. But we all carry them. Now, I thought, great. I'm going to go find more fun articles. Go to the entertainment page and see what musician died. You know, our health, your health, my health, our health is not always guaranteed to be there, is it? Job knows it. It was one of the things he feared. Deep down inside, he knew, I don't have to always be healthy. I just know that. He knew it. Our health could be gone in a moment. And we know it. We don't worry about it because we also know we have Jesus. So there is no fear. And God will heal and God will heal, but eventually you've got to leave here. So you're going to have to leave this body. So if God heals you 1,000 times, praise him, but sooner or later he's going to have to let you go. Right? He's just going to have to, if he loves you, he loves you more than you love you, and he wants you to be with him. Sooner or later, he's taking you home. Me too. So if he heals me of this or of that or the other, we praise him and we continue to serve. But we know in our hearts, sooner or later, he's going to have to let us finish or he's going to have to rapture us. Either way, we got to leave these bodies here. It's going to happen. We know it. So knowing all that, what do you depend on? What do you look to? What are you counting on? Where is our hope? Where is it? Where's your hope? Where is our trust? Is it in the medical community? Where is your trust? Where is it? Where are our hearts? Job said it, I was not in safety. There was always the chance that I could lose it all. There was always that chance. I was never in safety. Even though he longed for peace and quiet and rest, he experienced just the opposite. Pain, stress, turmoil, confusion. He was in physical, emotional, intellectual, and spiritual pain all at the same time. And he did not know how to deal with it. He can't understand it all. He doesn't know what's happened. He doesn't know what's going on. That's where we have to stop. Now we're going to see the next time we get together what his friends think. And you're going to learn why he called them miserable comforters. He wasn't talking about blankets on a bed. He was talking about after they get through talking, they really weren't a lot of help. And why? Because they didn't really understand the Lord either. You and I have the New Testament. We should understand the Lord our God. We should begin to know him, realizing that all of this is in God's hands. Every bit of it. Our lives are in his hands. That's why we're not afraid. That's why we don't panic like the rest of the world does. That's why we were embarrassed for the church when years ago the church was so afraid of this Y2K thing. It was an embarrassment because the church was saying, we're scared, and if we don't take care of ourselves, we're not going to make it. And all the time, we should have been saying, we got God, it's not a problem. Doesn't mean you shouldn't plan and have a blanket in your car and have a spare tire. But we've got God. If God be for us, Bible teaches us, who can be against us? The answer is, can't be done. We're safe and secure in him. There is peace in Jesus. There is no peace anywhere else, as Job showed us. Pray about these things. Pray about your own life. Think about cousin Job. And think about the fire that brought those impurities out. And God's going to scrape them off. And God will purify this man and strengthen him up. God said he is upright and he is mature now. But wait, I'll just bless him by strengthening even more. God works in our lives. And he's working in some of your lives right now. And you, like Job, are saying, I can't see any direction in this. Trust the Lord. As Proverbs 3, 5, and 6, trust in the Lord with all your heart. Don't lean on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he will direct your paths. Make your paths straight so that you can walk them. Let's bow our heads.